Please be advised that the topics discussed in this episode may be sensitive and could be triggering depending on your current life circumstances. We encourage you to listen with care and take breaks if needed. If you find the content overwhelming, please consider reaching out to a trusted friend, family member, or professional for support. You are listening to part one of our special two-part mini-series, A Conversation in Honor of National Caregivers Month.
Welcome to Clifton Health On Air. I'm your host, Danielle. And today is a special episode in honor of November being National Family Caregivers Month. We wanted to highlight the importance of family caregivers.
Today, I am here with Kaisha from Miravie at Clifton, via Zoom, Miriam from Hackensack Meridian's John Thoreau Cancer Center, and from the Clifton Health Department, our very own Tom Sadowski, social worker, and Kimberly Finkler, health educator. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Hello, hello.
So happy. Good morning.
We're excited.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here and taking the time to provide our residents with this episode. So just to touch upon some statistics, in the United States, more than half of those providing care don't recognize themselves as caregivers. As a result, many do not access tools that can alleviate caregiver stress. So, to everyone, why is caregiving so important?
This is Kaisha, and I'm bringing greetings from Miravie at Clifton. Working every day in such an environment where caregiving is so important, it just adds so much value to see them living their best life. With that being said, it takes a village. So every day when I see our amazing caregivers and staff giving the care to the residents, it really means a lot. The residents are treated as if, you know, you will want someone to treat your family members with good health, with providing them with resident experience, you know, just helping them live their best life. Nutrition, we have an amazing food service director, so all components to give care for our residents is extremely, extremely important. In my department, we really help them live their best life with health, wealth, social, emotional. We tap into all of their senses, even as seniors. So I'm excited to be here today and to talk about the importance of caregiving.
Awesome. Thank you so much. What drew you to this position? And did you always think of yourself as a caregiver or...
Well, my background is education, but the bottom line is when you have seniors, as special as my seniors, just being there every day to see their smiles is priceless. Tom and Erica have been in our community many times to share in those smiles and experiences, and they can witness our residents living their best life. And with that being said, once again, it takes a village. When Tom and Erica and Nate, they come in and add the social components to our seniors, it just adds value and it adds life onto the, you know, to their living. So, you know, it really means a lot. When I create a daily schedule and a monthly schedule, I put thought into it. I don't just add bingo. You know, I said, how can this help my senior in the health area? How can this help my senior mentally, you know, how can it help them spiritually? So I really do my best when I put forth the calendar. So it takes a village, and I'm thankful for Tom and Erica to be a part of the village when they come to Miravie at Clifton.
Thank you so much. More than 65 million people, 29% of the United States population, provide care for a chronically ill, disabled, or aged family member or friend during any given year and spend an average of 20 hours per week providing care for their loved ones. 23 of family caregivers care for loved ones for 5 years or more report their health is fair or poor. So, how does that make everyone feel, I guess, related to the statistics that I have read?
Yeah, so I think those statistics are pretty accurate. Just to give a personal story, last fall, my father had a hip replacement completed, and after the surgery, he actually had an allergic reaction to the anesthesia afterward. He is a senior, so his recovery was a bit slower than it should have been. But with the allergic reaction, it created a whole bunch of problems. You know, he had a bowel issue. He had, like, more pain in the area of the operation. And I think that was one of the most stressful and, like, you know, anxiety-filled weeks of my life. I think I only slept 2 hours for the whole week each night at most, because I had to get up and help him out. So I can definitely see how the stress and anxiety sets in for people who have to take care of family members when there's an opportunity to do it. So it's very important in that sense.
For me, I would say I've been living this journey for the last 18 years, almost 19 years. My firstborn was 3 months premature. And initially, my husband and I, our first child, we thought, okay, she's going to be in an incubator. She'll be all right. She'll get out. But she ended up needing multiple surgeries, spent 5 months in the NICU. And as she grew, we noticed there were severe delays. She started having a seizure disorder. And eventually, I fought for her diagnosis at age 2. She had pervasive developmental disorder, part of the autism spectrum disorders. And it was really hard for us and for our family dynamic because she really needed 24-hour care. It wasn't the same as some of our family members, friends who had children even in the same age group. And as she grew, those needs grew with her. And 5 years ago, we were faced with an onslaught of different things that just fell on us. My mom was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer in 2017, and I became her primary caregiver while still taking care of a disabled child. We moved our family of, at that time, 4, my husband, myself, our disabled child, and our son, into my mother's tiny 2-bedroom apartment to care for her while she was getting multiple surgeries, rounds of chemo, and different experimental trials to try to preserve her life a bit more. And really, you just kind of go into automated mode when that happens, right? Like, you know, hearing your story about your dad, there was no question you were gonna take care of him. And for me, my mother had sacrificed everything for my brother and I. So there was no question that when she got this horrific diagnosis that I was going to be her caregiver. No one was going to do it. I didn't care how many degrees they had. No nurse that could come into the home would be better at caregiving than me. But I didn't realize how much of a toll it would take on my health, my mental health, my physical health. In the first month that my mother was diagnosed, I gained 40 pounds. My blood pressure went up. I had to be on blood pressure medication, which I was never on before. And it was just because I was just so dedicated to try and help my mom that I forgot about myself. And I think that's what happens to a lot of caregivers, right? We just go into kind of an automated mode, like our iPhones switch off on airplane mode. And we just start giving of ourselves, and we don't realize that our bodies also need rest. We need someone to talk to. We also need to eat nourishing foods. We also need the time to reflect on what's happening, and your body will show you signs and symptoms that it's breaking down.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm just taking in your story and hearing it, and how hard, I couldn't even imagine how hard that is. Thank you for sharing. for many, this is a very hard conversation. It will touch a lot of people. You guys are going to connect with so many residents in this community. And many of those don't even know what they're doing and who they're taking care of. They just think, oh, I'm taking care of this child. As you stated, it was your firstborn. There's nothing you're going to take care of your firstborn. You're going to take care of your mother because they took care of you, right?
It's not easy. Even being able to talk about this, I mean, you almost feel selfish if you complain or you say something. But I think that when I was going through it, because I had already been so used to caring for my daughter, my daughter had 3 surgeries before she was even 6 months old. They removed half of her small bowel. She had heart surgery. She had to stool inside of an ostomy bag. And every day was very hit or miss. And those days seemed like an eternity for those first 5 months of her life. And again, I was very ignorant to think that that was it. You know, it was kind of like, you know, first time mom. My husband and I were in our 20s when we had her. And we didn't think that this would be kind of what we would be going through. And, you know, a lot of things happened, I would say, within the last few years with the pandemic, my mom getting so sick, and she was really our only support system when it came to our daughter. She'd sleep on the floor with us in the hospital. She'd cook for all the residents and all the nurses and doctors when she was in the hospital. And as my daughter Allison grew, she was faced with more and more challenges, and they intensified. And even through it all, even when my mom got diagnosed and was very sick herself and really just in the fight of her life, she still somehow managed to be my support system and to help us. And I remember that there were times when, you know, one of our friends would drop my son off to her at chemo so that he would have a place to go after school, because I changed over my hours at work so that I can be with my mom on the days when she was wiped out from the chemotherapy. And recently, and I kind of shared with you a little bit, but my daughter in the last year has been in crisis. For someone that has, she's on the autism spectrum, she has ADHD, and she also has a seizure disorder. A mental health crisis for a child or a young adult, because she's 18 now. What it's looked like for us is violent, aggressive outbursts. She has destroyed our home property. She's hurt herself to the point that she fractured her skull in 3 places. And really, you know, you're as a parent, you just, or as a daughter or a son, as a wife, a brother, a sister, you don't think about it. You just do it. But I realize, like, being on 24/7 is really hard. It's really exhausting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, especially when you're a professional, you have to come into work and, like, you know, you're the director of a program, and you all deal with a lot of heavy things. Sometimes you have to be on, and you have to have a smile on your face, and you have to think quickly. But inside, you're struggling, because at home you just left the situation, or at home, you know, no one knows that you've slept maybe 2 hours because you've been dealing with the fight of your life, quite literally. And I think when I think about caregiving, you know, it's not just like watching someone, making sure that they eat. Like, the word care, putting in love and putting in intention into what you're doing, sometimes that's exhausting in and of itself when you're not feeling 1,000%, when your body is tired and you haven't had the right nourishment, you just grab something from the vending machine or whatever, you know, your toddler left over. And it's really hard. And that's why I think for me, it's so important to have outlets. For me, it's my faith, it's my friends, it's just being able to talk to someone. And a lot of times, even that takes a lot of courage to be honest and open up and say, I'm not having a good day today. Today is not a good day. I'm not okay. And, you know, with my husband and I, we usually do a check, you know, and we do a percentage. And I'll tell him, like, today I'm 20%. So you have to take the other 80. Mm-hmm. But what happens on the days when you're both 20% or you're 5% or you're no percent?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when there's other members of your family or other people that need you and depend on you, aside from the individual that you're caregiving for, like you're taking care of, like your work, your other children. In my case, I have a almost 5-year-old and I have a 14-year-old son, and our family dynamic is so incredibly unique because of our daughter, because she's the eldest, but really mentally she's the youngest. And it's hard. And it's hard because we're still grieving the loss of my mom, and we're still trying to get used to our new family dynamic where everyone kind of has to pitch in. And when something is just a little off, it can break you. And I think that's, like, you know, when you share these statistics about caregiving and about, you know, how it affects your health, and it's real, and it happens so suddenly, but at the same time, like a slow drip, you don't even realize that it's happening to you. You don't realize that you're eroding. You don't realize that you're wearing away that your mental health until one day you kind of snap at something that was small, or you feel your body start showing signs that, hi, you've been neglecting me. And that's what's really hard. And you don't want to feel like, you know, a selfish idiot and complain when you're watching your family member go through surgery or go through chemo, or, you know, like I think about my daughter, for instance, like I wonder what she feels, because she can't express it the way that you and I can speak, because she's not neurotypical. And how, and I think that's part of the frustration, is that you want to help them, but we want to help in the way that only we know how, but sometimes situations arise where we don't even have that peace. And so what do we do then?
I guess that's the question.
I can totally relate to everything you're saying. I've done therapy for children on the autism spectrum for almost 11 years now. So I understand, like, the family dynamic and the different things they go through. Like, seeing a client on a Saturday and, you know, taking them out into the community, the parents are so grateful because it gives them the opportunity to go out for dinner, catch up on their week, maybe visit a family member, and know that their child is still safe at the same time. But also, you know, talking to families that I've worked with, you know, just telling me how, like, stressful life was with the upbringing, all the doctor's visits, you know, issues with the school district, you know, not providing the services the child needed, and, you know, getting legally involved and everything like that. So I totally, you know, hear everything you're saying, and, you know, voice that, you know, anxiety for all the families that are out there. It's just so important to have, you know, support, and, you know, support that you can trust and, you know, makes a difference in your life.
I actually want to send you a virtual hug, if I can, and I hope you receive it, and anyone else that needs a virtual hug out there. I want to share, my son was born 26 years ago with microcephaly. It's like developmental, and it was really hard to be a parent of a special needs child, but guess what? Through that, I had to work, encourage him, you know, go to different doctors, tests, everything like that. But since he was born, it takes a village. I had to work with every therapist, early childhood education, you know, early intervention, all of those things that got me to be knowledgeable of how to help my son, okay? And I want to encourage you, because I always encourage my son to never give up. So even though our children are different, but the strength of a parent is the foundation, you know. So I want to encourage you to to do your best to keep the strength and encourage her. And I'm so happy. All these years I encouraged my son. I worked with everybody that worked with him. We became a family. If the speech therapist was working with my son, we were like a family. If the occupational therapist worked with my son, we were like a family. And I'm so proud to announce my son is the first student to ever graduate college from the special needs program in the town that I live in. So I just want to, you know, move forward and share an encouraging story. You know, the doctor said he would never walk, he would never talk, he would never do this. And not only did he graduate college, he now, full circle, comes to Mira V, and he volunteers in the capacity of helping them with sports classes. So I just wanted to share that encouraging story as a parent of a special needs of a special needs child, because I had to be a caregiver for so many years for him, and he's a true success story, and I'm thankful. And now he encourages students with special needs that they can do it. And even when you were talking about your mom, at the age of 17, I lived in Mountainside Hospital. If everybody's familiar with Mountainside Hospital in Montclair, my mom had cancer. And think about how hard that was at 17 years old. Like, I, like, lived in the hospital, you know. The staff let me stay there at night. And, you know, so I had to, like, the only thing they had to do was give my mom her medicine. But, like, I cleaned her. I was such a caregiver. Mm. And this podcast, like, brought me back. And it's not a sad thing, because I truly miss my mom every day. But to know that I was able to, you know, be there for her and be, you know, she got to see me graduate from high school. So I try to focus on the good moments. Mm. You know, she was so sick at my graduation, but she saw me walk across the bridge to graduate. She saw my first daughter was born, because I'm like, why am I having a child so young? But everything happens in life for a reason, you know, and my daughter is like, she'll be 30 now. She'll be 30 in May, but I had to have her at that time because I needed her to be my strength. Mm-hmm. You know, and my mom named her, you know, before she passed away. So I want to encourage you and everybody out there to try to focus on the good moments, even in the midst of when things don't look good, you know. And so with that being said, after my mom passed, I lost my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles. I have no family biologically. But I'm so proud that when I go to Mira V at Clifton, I truly consider them to be my family. I look at them like my grandparents and, you know, somebody that can be my mom. So I treat them as such. You know, I treat them like I would want someone to treat my mom or my dad or my grandmother. So I just wanted to take a moment to share that encouraging story and to encourage you and everyone out there.
I think it's so beautiful that you're able to, that everything is able to come back full circle, because, like, even with this job, I've done clinical research management for the majority of my career, and I was able to get this opportunity to work in cancer, and I feel like I'm able to give back to this community because of my mom, because I saw it firsthand. And it's different, right? Because you were a young woman sitting in a hospital and you watched what your mother went through, and that made you into an empathetic, strong woman who thinks of your residents not as just someone who's sitting there, who's, you know, you think of them as your family. And I think that that's why it's so important. And I agree with you. Everything that happens shapes us. I think, you know, it is really tough. Yes, in our home, I'm not gonna, like, sugarcoat it. there are some days when only by the grace of God we can get up and move forward because we live a nightmare sometimes. But I think about like my son and my little daughter, and I see how loving they are, and they wouldn't have been these amazing kids if not because of the situation with their sister, because they understand that we have to be patient with one another and love one another, and not everybody understands things the same way. Everyone is unique and has a unique fingerprint and has a unique way of understanding and receiving information. And I think that if we, like you and I, have let the lessons that life have taught us show us how to care for other people, and I think that's a blessing, you know. But not everyone has that mindset. Sometimes people are in a rush and they think this is a business and they go through. But if, what if we took the time to just sit back for a second and say, you know, when we see an individual that has special needs, that could be my son or my daughter. Or when we see someone who's elderly, that could be my mom, my dad, or my uncle. And I think that life and being a caregiver, while difficult and painful and horrific at times, it really is the best teacher, right, about what this life is about, you know, and that it's not about me, and that it's not about you, but it's about what we can, how we can use our gifts to help someone else, to help push them through the mud, because we remember in the times when we were going through the fire and when we were going through it. And I agree with you 1,000%. I think it's such a blessing to see like the silver lining.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Kim, go. Oh,
I was going to say, no, I haven't said much yet. And I appreciate that everybody took the time to do this podcast today, because when I had went to Lauren and Danielle, I said, I want to do a caregivers podcast, and I wasn't sure how it was going to go. And as I'm sitting here, it's still hard to say that it's going to be 3 years this month since my mom passed from ALS. And having both of you here and everybody to advocate and highlight the importance of being a caregiver during that time, just while I'm still healing and doing all of this, and it's hard to put into words that we're still able to highlight and show the importance of those people. Miriam, like you said, you might see your coworker and you don't know what they're going through. You don't know that they're going home and they're now taking care of their loved one or their child, and they're in the midst of all this. So I just want to say thank you to everybody, and I'm so grateful that we've been able to do this podcast today and let people know that this is something so important and that there needs to be more awareness to it.
I agree with everything Kim just said. You know, I think your life journey, your life experience, that's your greatest teacher. You can have all the schooling in the world. You can go to college, you know, do everything that they tell you to do, but there's no greater teacher or lesson learned than what you learn through your journey in life. And I think as a caretaker, someone, you know, just in general, if that's your career or your family, I think it's always important to put yourself in another person's shoes, right? You may not live that exact situation, but you never know if you will one day or if somebody in your family will one day. So you have to put yourself in that lens and look through life in that perspective as well.
And Miriam, I think you said it so beautifully. It is interesting that, you know, all of us sitting in this room are in public health and a helping profession, and our caregivers. It just shows that we do look at the world differently, where we see that, you know, the people we care for every day, we look at them like family, and saying this could be, you know, my child, my son, my aunt, somebody that I love, and I want to make sure they're going to be okay too.
Yeah. I wish I was there to give you a hug, because I know how hard it is. My mom, it's going to be 4 years since I lost my mother. And, you know, really, she was our only support system. We don't have anybody, we didn't have anybody else to help us with our daughter, Allie, and she would sacrifice everything. So it just came, you know, second nature. Like, she was a single mom who raised us and did everything and gave us more than the households that had a typical, you know, nuclear family. So I know how hard it is when you're dealing with grief. And it's something that you never get over, right? because you'll never get over the loss of your parent, especially if you were close to them, because my mom was my best friend, my everything. And that's why sometimes it's really hard, because as much as I'm grateful for being able to talk to someone at my church or my friends, my mother was my person. She understood because she was in the trenches with us. But at the same time, I think about her life and her legacy and the things that she did, everything that she went through. Like, she was, you know, an abuse survivor when she was a kid. And she took all of her experiences, you know, as you just said so beautifully, right? That doesn't matter how many degrees you have, everything. Like, she took her experiences and she really made it about, she found her healing in helping other people. And I think that's a big part of our journey. Like, everybody that's in this room right now, we're all healing, and while we realize it or not, by helping other people, because the things that we've gone through and the things that we've experienced and still and are still going through, right? Because you, we're going through things on a daily basis. When we're able to help someone else in one way or another, it kind of stitches the broken pieces of our heart, and we're able to extend that. And then without even knowing, that's putting, that's depositing something in the next person who might be able to help others. Like the story of your son, it moves me to tears, because this is what I pray for my daughter, that one day she'll be able to, even if it's something simple, and volunteer with, you know, other kids, that that'll be her story. And I always tell her, like, she loves to cook, so I try to speak life over her, and I say, you're going to be the first James Beard award winning chef with autism. Mm-hmm. Like, who are we to decide someone's story? Who are we to be, you know, to put a final stamp? Like, only God knows. And I think it's so beautiful that every single person in this room has dedicated their lives to serving as a caregiver in another, on another level. And it just, you know, what we've gone through has kind of refined us in a way where we can shine that light and be that voice and connect the dots and love on somebody that maybe never had that before. You know, like your residents, I wish I could volunteer with you, because that's, I mean, let me know at the end. I would love to.
I just want to say, I remember Tom and Erica and Nate came to our community, and a resident, she had just recently moved in our community, and she was 99 years old. So when she came to the activity, I'm like, Tom, Nate, Erica, she is 99 years old. And we celebrated her, and we just clapped for her and her smile. She was kind of bashful. And they were doing an activity in like healthy living bingo, I think. And she won. And we made it such a big deal, right? And so I just want to share just recently, she was actually the same resident. She was on hospice for a month prior, right? But it was on my heart. Something said, let me do a homecoming dance for the seniors, right? So I had a DJ. I said to the family, I said, I really want to get her dress. I really want to honor her and crown her at homecoming. You know what happened? She got dressed up beautifully. The daughter bought her, and we crowned her, and I asked the daughter to give her flowers on September 12th. I taught her how to do like the parade wave and everything like that. So 1 week later, God calls her home. But guess what? She was able to have that moment. Her daughter was able to give her the flowers. And, you know, she was able to be surrounded by her friends. And it's just those caregiver moments, mm-hmm. those moments where you have to give your loved ones their flowers. And I know she's smiling down and say, only Kai can give me out my room. Because, like, literally, she was in her room for a month. And I said, we're going to get you dressed. And we crowned and we gave her a sash. And wow. Her birthday is on Christmas Day, and she will be 100 years old.
Oh, wow.
But the fact that Tom and Erica was there in prior months to give her a gift of love, the fact that she was able to get her flowers 1 week before God called her home, these are the moments that we are creating at MiraVie for our seniors to help them to add to their life, you know? So it just means a lot to pour continuous love on them.
And it also displays your strength and your grace. You walk into a room and you're literally lighting up the entire room with your presence, and that is amazing. Mm-hmm. And as well, it's something breathtaking because mm-hmm. you feel your energy and your grace, basically.
And it's not easy, as my friend on it.
Miriam.
As Miriam said, you know, I go through a lot, but when I walk through the door, I try to just, you know, check in and just be the sunshine that they need. But what happens, you know, what happens, and I want to be very transparent, it's so important as a caregiver to recognize when you're not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, at a point in my life, I wasn't okay. You know, I was going through like a divorce. I was going through trying to, you know, maintain life. And then I had to go to work every day and be okay for someone else. And I did it in a good capacity. You would never know.
Mm.
But I wasn't okay.
Right.
And then, you know what happened? I actually had a stroke. I had a stroke because everything was like building up. Thank you, God. I'm still here. I'm walking. I'm cute. I wish you could see me. I'm just like, I just try to smile. But, you know, I'm still here. And that was a time where, you know, it caught up to me. So now I have to recognize when I'm not okay.
Right.
But I want people to be encouraged. You have to recognize when you're okay. You have to do self-care, self-love, take time for you. I wasn't doing that. I was doing it for everybody else. Mm-hmm. And Kaisha wasn't okay. So now when I'm not okay, I have to take that moment, you know, because God gave me another chance.
Mm-hmm.
I was in rehab. I had to learn how to walk. You know, it was a deep time. And that's my testimony. Every test has a testimony. So I'm grateful to be in a room with some beautiful people to share the test and encourage you how to get to a testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I can talk with you all day, guys. This could be 2 hours long. I think I just want to touch upon some questions that the residents may have. Maybe some residents are feeling that they don't have a support system or family that they can turn to during these times. Maybe they're caregivers and also support people. So how can they stop and pause? Because we know it's so necessary for them to take a moment for themselves. I guess, how can they overcome that boundary that they may face?
I think just like Kaisha said, being able to recognize and, you know, take time at, even if it's the end of the day, middle of the day, to have 5 minute, like, check in with yourself and maybe say, you know, today I need a little extra support, whether it's from friends or family or maybe, you know, doing like a meditation or whatever that self-care may look like to you.
I agree. I think also it's important to understand that it's okay to ask for help. You know, we all have support. We didn't get to where we are in life without someone else helping us. Like an example I can give you today, this week I had someone text me looking for help for a daughter, an 18-year-old girl on the autism spectrum disorder who just recently started experiencing seizures. And basically the mother is a nurse and, you know, she has a 9-to-5 shift and she's looking for help. So she was looking for like a nursing aide or somebody that can assist the daughter when she gets home from her day program at 2 o'clock, between 2 and 5. And, you know, the person told me, you know, like the woman is recently widowed. The daughter is basically just experiencing seizures now at this point in her life. And they're still looking for support, and they're not holding back from finding it. So for me, it was an honor to, you know, be the person that they came to look for help. And, you know, I gave them a couple of resources and contact numbers and things like that. But my overall message is just ask for support, ask for help, because the longer you keep it bottled up inside of you, the worse it will get.
And I think maybe utilizing too, like we have this podcast and things like Facebook and Instagram. I know when my mom was in the midst of her diagnosis, I went on Facebook and I was looking if there was any groups and maybe people that were my age. And I ended up finding somebody that was on The Bachelor, and she made like a Facebook page. And now I ended up going, you know, to all different states and meeting with these women that had similar experiences. Because like we said, we might look, like Miriam was talking about, we might go to our faith and all these things, and that's good, you know, but we also maybe want to see like people that have similar experiences as well.
That's right. I want to just add that it looks different for everybody. Self-care looks different, and asking for help is like so important. Even when you are, you know, meditating, or you're praying, or, you know, like everything, self-care a lot of times looks different, because as caregivers, we feel like it's selfish, or when we turn things inward, then we're taking away from the person or the individuals that we're helping. But you can't pour from an empty cup. And I can't give you if I'm wasting away, right? And I think, like, for me, day to day, it looks different. And even if it's 5 minutes making the cup of coffee the way that I like it, and frothing the milk and putting the cinnamon on, you know what? That's something that I'm doing to honor my time. And so that makes me feel good, and that makes me feel present and happy. And that's part of self-care. If it means going outside and taking a deep breath and feeling the sun, you know, on your skin for 5 minutes, then that's also part of self-care. If it means not taking a call for, you know, 30 minutes, or blocking off time on your calendar so that you can just sit down and just do nothing. Sometimes it's doing nothing. Doing nothing is also self-care. And I think a lot of times we're in this mode of, I gotta be busy, I gotta do this, I gotta do that, I gotta do the third. And listening to your testimony about how you finally, like, your body broke down and you had a stroke, we have to remember that sometimes pressing pause is self-care. And one thing that I've had to learn is saying no is okay. Not agreeing to do everything for everyone and doing stuff because you are a caregiver and you're doing 10,000 million things, sometimes it looks different. And one of the things that I've done with my friends is I call them and I say, hey, do you have 7 minutes? When I feel like I'm like going to lose it, I just want 7 minutes. I just want to be able to vent about something, or I just want someone to cry with, or, hey, I want to hear a funny story or something to distract me. Or, do you have 2 minutes to pray with me? Whatever it is, but it looks different for everyone. And just because we've all shared these unique stories, you know, doesn't mean that maybe, you know, whoever's listening, it doesn't look like that for you. Maybe your mountain is not, you know, a sick child or a sick family member, but there is a situation in your life. Like, be encouraged that there are people here who want to hear your story, and your story matters, and that you should take the time to care for you, because you can't pour from an empty cup.
To any residents that are listening out there, I want to tell all of you, you are loved, you are unique in your own way. And with that being said, we have a specific resident that is not as social as some of the other residents, but as a director of resident experience, I said, what could we do to get her to connect to our community? She recently just came about a month ago, and this specific resident loves dolls. Like dolls, right? Classic dolls. And if you go to her room, they're dressed up, they have birthdays. So I said, you know what? I asked her, I said, how do you feel about having a doll show? We'll make a stage, we'll do whatever we have to do. And on October 9th, I made a flyer. On October 9th, that was a breakthrough. She was able to do a doll show. She bought 5 dolls. She bought the history of her dolls. She had pictures. So I just wanted to, you know, share that positive experience, because not every resident is going to come on, like, come on, I'm ready for live music, or I'm ready for, dance class, you know, you have to know your seniors, your residents. You have to know how you can connect with mm-hmm. them to help Absolutely. Them individually live their best life. So I'm looking forward to part two, to have a doll show for her during the holiday.
Okay.
And, you know, I just wanted to encourage all the caregivers, just meet, you know, meet your seniors where they are individually and collectively, know them, how you can help them to live their best life. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Wow. Thank you all for sharing your testimony. I'm in awe of all of you. All of you. And anyone listening who needs someone to talk to or someone to reach out to ask for help, we do have some resources here at the Clifton Health Department. Feel free to give us a call at 973-470-5760. We'll connect you with our social services team. We'll connect you with a nurse. We'll connect you with someone that will take the time to listen and provide you with any resources you need. We do have some resources. Caregiver Action Network. We'll put that link in the bio of this podcast. Does the John Thoreau Cancer Center have any resources?
We do. We have incredible navigators who can connect, you know, residents, community members with any resources that they might need. So definitely.
Any final words?
I just wanted to say, regardless of what you're going through or someone you know is going through, just remind yourself that it's okay to take time with it. You're going to heal in your own individual way. There's no wrong way that, you know, you're going to get through it. Just take your time and make sure you do it right. And, you know, just ask for help if you need it. There's nothing wrong with that. You're on your own individual life journey, and everyone who is in your life is there for a reason.
Absolutely. Like Kaisha said, you are loved. You are welcomed in this space, and it is okay to ask for help. Being a caregiver, you are an unsung hero, and I'm here to say you are my hero. I thank you every day for everything that you do, everything that you've done, and the people you care for. Just thank you out there in the virtual world. And if you need any encouraging words, this podcast will be that outlet. So I want to thank everyone again for sharing your testimonies and being here with me and providing that space for other caregivers. And I want to thank Kim for coming up with this idea of this episode. And it won't be the last. So that is awesome.
Yes, thank you, everybody, for doing this podcast with all of us. And I feel like we said, we were kind of putting ourselves, even though we might be that broken glass that might be shattered all over the floor, we're slowly just picking up the pieces and putting ourselves back together by being in this room together and having a passion for what we do and for our loved ones.
I just want to give everybody once again virtual hugs out there, and I want to thank you so much for allowing me to be here this morning. It takes a village, and I thank you all for being a part of the village. And I want to encourage everybody to continue in the spirit of strength, love, compassion, kindness. And absolutely. I also want to just leave with a quote. Don't break down before your breakthrough, because life will try to make you break down, but your breakthrough is right there. So stay encouraged.
Definitely. Thank you so much for inviting me to come on this caregiver podcast. All of your stories are so beautiful, and Like you said about the broken glass, I just thought of that quote, broken crayons still color. So use your gifts and just keep painting and keep coloring.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, just be kind to people and kindness will shine through you. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, everyone. This was Clifton Health on Air.